James Watson and Francis Crick were the scientists who in 1953 discovered what's called the double helix structure of DNA. Anybody would know what DNA is, the long form of DNA? Anybody here can say that? Deoxyribonucleic acid. Thank you, Pastor Wes. And it's an acid in all of us containing the genetic instructions and blueprints for life. It was a dynamic discovery because it finally explained what scientists had wondered for years and years. That is how genetic instructions were held inside a living organism and passed on from generation to generation. They explained in actuality why you have your mother's nose, why you have your father's eyes, and why you have your Uncle Herman's pigeon toes. It was a landmark discovery that described what had been a fundamental mystery to living organisms. Now, when asked about the process, Crick said, "It's true that in blundering about, you know, English guys, we struck gold. But the fact remains we were looking for gold. We were asking the right questions over and over and over again." You can discover a lot by asking the right questions. And in today's text, Jesus asks the disciples some questions, powerful questions. So take a look at Mark chapter 8, beginning in verse 27. Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi, and on the way he asked them, "Who do people say I am?" And they replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, still others one of the prophets." "But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" And Peter answered, "You're the Messiah." You know, that's understanding. You are the Christ. You are the one who has come to save us. Jesus warned them not to tell anybody about him. Now, keep that passage in mind. Let's take a look at some interesting things here when it comes to these questions, okay? First thing is, in the first verse of what we're looking at, verse 27, Jesus asks a general question, just a general question. It's not a trick question. It's not a deeply theological question. It's not a question that could only be answered by the likes of Watson and Crick. It was just an unremarkable, easy, general question for the disciples to answer. It was a softball, if you will. Who do people say that I am? What are they saying? Jesus was trying to jumpstart a conversation with the disciples. If you've ever done any work with small group leadership, you may notice that he was introducing an icebreaker that's designed to put people at ease, get them talking about the familiar, and eventually prepare them to listen for, deal with, and consider some more serious things down the line. He's, in effect, priming the pump for some deeper issues. He gets the disciples to start thinking. Everybody say thinking. I consider this a great example of leadership because the leader, Jesus, is challenging his followers to think. We've mentioned that a number of times this summer. And I don't know if you've noticed, but besides the tech field, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of thoughtful consideration about much of anything going on lately. I mean, it seems like today people don't discuss anymore, right? They kind of just declare what they believe and exclude all other opinions. They watch the news from only one network, right? The network that shares their bias, tells them what's true, and quite honestly, that's true for both sides. They believe that because something has always been done a certain way, it can't ever change. Do you know there are still people upset that vinyl records have been replaced? Right? A vinyl record.
The circle.
It was about this big. It had grooves on it. You put a needle. Just, sometimes you have to teach history. I mean, there are still others who think the South should rise again. We human beings have a strong tendency to latch on an idea, and if it works for us once or twice, we ride that horse long after it's dead and buried. In essence, honestly, I think we humans have a tendency to stop thinking at our earliest convenience. Jesus challenges the disciples to start thinking again outside their staid, well-footed, and beloved Jewish tradition. Who do people say that I am? What are they saying out there? What are you hearing? And the disciples answered, well, they answered generally. It was a general question. They got their thinking caps on and started to tell Jesus all they had heard from the people in the surrounding region who had encounters with Jesus. They answered, well, some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, some say one of the prophets. So now the discussion is out there. The small group leader has begun to elicit responses from his group, and the discussion gets rolling. I can't emphasize enough, friends, it's amazing what happens when God's people begin to actually think about what's going on around us. When we do that, our brains and our hearts get engaged, and all sorts of ideas and all sorts of preparedness for what's next becomes a part of us and all those we've gathered together with. Whether we're in a Bible study, around the kitchen table, at the water cooler at the office, at the lunch truck, at the job site, thinking is a good thing. And since their response here is just a summary of all the things they were tossing out in the discussion, Jesus really has them thinking at this point. And that's a good thing, because the next question he asks is the most important question they'll ever be asked. He asks them a personal question. See, this is where the icebreaker goes from warming up for the game to the actual game itself. This is where Jesus has been going all along in the discussion, because this is where the disciples and you and I need to eventually arrive. This is the question they and you and I have waited our whole lives for. The question whose answers will help to clarify their reason and our reason for living. And he asks them, but how about you? Heard what everybody's saying. What about you? Who do you say that I am? This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where it actually gets going. This is where it's become personal. Before it was general. Oh yeah, Master, they're saying all kinds of things about you. You won't believe it. Some think you're a prophet. Others think you're John the Baptist. Even others think you're the big bopper, Elijah himself. It's amazing all the ideas that people have about you. But now it becomes personal. Jesus asks them, in the midst of all the chaos of opinion and confusion and judgmentalism and legalism and all the other rules and misrepresentation of the rules out there, he asks them through the fog of all of that, what do you think? Because in the end, that's really what matters, right? That is to say, general responses usually do not touch the heart. They make a nice report, maybe a riveting textbook for class, but general responses don't really touch the soul. It's personal decisions that do that. I mean, think of it in a less serious situation. What are you going to have for dinner tonight? What if you responded to question number one? Oh, Ed, there are so many people in the world who are having so many things for dinner tonight. It's amazing. You should hear what they're having. Lamb, buffalo, Skittles. But if you don't decide what you're having for dinner, you are going to be a Methodist who skips a meal, right? And we know that's an oxymoron. An oxymoron, by the way, are two things that don't go together. It's not eight dumb guys, okay? An oxymoron is two things that don't go together. Or how about this question? What clothes are you going to wear today? Oh my goodness, Ed. So many fashion statements out there. They're wearing so many different things. Tank tops, sweatshirts, skinny jeans. Yeah, that all may be true. But if you don't choose what you yourself are going to wear, you're going to have a little chill. Or you're going to get sunburned at a place where the sun was never supposed to burn. So when the general moves to the personal, it requires a specific response from us. And Jesus asked them all, I believe, as individuals, but what about you? Who do you say that I am? Now, I find their response interesting. Stick with me for a minute, okay? In verses 27 and 28, Jesus asked a general question, and in verse 28, who answers? They answered, right? And they responded, and there's a summary of all the things that they said. It was a discussion. They were tossing out all kinds of realities that they had heard around town, or at the gas station, or on campus, or in class, or wherever. But after Jesus' specific question in verse 29, how many answers do we hear? One. Peter, right? Jesus got the discussion going. All kinds of theories passed around town were being talked about by his disciples. Yeah, not only that, I heard someone said he was a great prophet, but he's so great he could probably bat cleanup for the Mets. I mean, there's all kinds of theories out there. And all the disciples were participating. But when the question got personal, everyone got quiet, but one. Now, I don't think that means the other disciples were not participating. I think they were participating fully. But they were shocked that Jesus had moved from the general to the specific, and they knew what that meant. The need for a personal and specific answer that they might not have thought much about to this point. And Peter responds, "You're the Messiah. You are the Christ." Do you see how moving from the general religious activity to the specific and personal faith decision kind of thins the herd, so to speak? You know, we can do all of the following generally. Never miss a worship service, never miss a Bible study or a church supper, a choir practice, or ever miss, God forbid, a meeting. We can have a perfect record in all of those generalities in life. You can make an argument the disciples thought the same thing about themselves. I mean, after all, they were with Jesus every day, right? Day after day, walking the dusty roads of Palestine. They probably felt pretty good about their general service. But Jesus doesn't deal in the general. He deals in the specific. It doesn't matter what denomination you belong to, who your pastor is, what version of the Bible you read, or whether you know what hymn number 704 in the United Methodist hymnal is. Steal away to Jesus, by the way. Jesus wants you to decide specifically who he is in your life. Remember, God only has children. He doesn't have grandchildren. You don't become related to God because you have a relative who follows God. You only have a relationship with God when you move to the specific in your life. So my friends, in the midst of all sorts of musing and uncivil discussion and exhausting opinions, who do you say that Jesus is? There are lots of theories these days about lots of things. Let me share one that I hope puts a practical handle on it for you. For starters, hunger in our country, in our world, is a calamitous problem. Some blame government, some blame big business, some blame the apathy of the citizens of the world, others blame the ridiculous mistakes repeated for centuries, and certainly all those factors have played a role. However, here's what I think has created the hunger problem. I'm just going to put it out there. I believe we have a hunger problem in this country, in this world, because God's people, that's me and that's you, sit back and allow Peter to answer the question, "Who do you say that I am?" And we remain silent. We let ourselves off the hook, just as the other disciples let themselves off the hook, hoping Peter would open his big mouth. Because, my friends, if we really did believe that Jesus is whom Peter said he was, the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of God, Christians who deeply believe that, and are there any other kind, would be feeding those who are hungry and quenching those who are thirsty and clothing those who are naked at an overwhelming and world-changing pace. But too often, because we have so many general opinions about God and theology, we never get specific and are simply content to have a Jesus of generalities around us. One who's really only there to have someone to ask for a blessing at our own meal. Consider this with me. What would our ministry look like? More importantly, what would we look like if Jesus was really the Christ, the Son of the living God, to us? That is, what if we went beyond simply saying those words and were captured by the gravitational pull of Jesus so that our lives actually revolved around him and his life-altering call? That's what Jesus is aiming for here when he asks, "But who do you say that I am?" You see, the answer to that question will affect all that you say and do and think and live for, and all that you are, just like it did for Peter. That is our goals, our dreams, our relationships, our careers, our hopes and desires for First Church, and a myriad of other choices are guided by how we answer that question. Don't let somebody else answer it for you. Don't sit back and pray for a loud-mouthed Peter or Petet in your midst. I've always imagined the dynamics 2,000 years ago in that disciple small group after Jesus asked that question, but who do you say that I am? I've always imagined the dynamics like this. There was a moment of silence after Jesus asked the question, and almost everyone looked away from Jesus like we do when the teacher is about to call on us and we don't know the answer. Do you know that look? Jesus says, "Who do you say that I am?" You've been there. And in that moment of silence, the other disciples are saying, praying, maybe even chanting to themselves, "Oh God, please let Peter answer. Please, please, Peter, say something, anything. You can't ever shut up anyway. Please say something." And when Peter answered, there was a collective "phew" from everybody. Off the hook again. Instead, folks, be the one who says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You are my reason for living, and I am your follower." That will begin to change everything in your house. Don't let somebody else answer. Jesus really wants to hear from you. Who do you say that he is?